You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Labor Day morning, the first day of September 2025. And I trust it's another beautiful morning in Wisconsin, here up north, or wherever you're spending your mornings listening along the Civic Media Radio Network or by podcast. We so appreciate that you're up early on this holiday. Coming up, we're going to play back our interview with Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez about her decision to run for governor now that Tony Evers is retiring. So if you've heard about Sarah Rodriguez, but actually want to hear from her about what she hopes to bring to our state as governor, stick around and give a listen. We'll hear from Up North News reporter Selena Heller with a story about the life-saving care that does sometimes require abortion and how bans truly put women's health and life in danger. We'll explain how someone's taking an active role in screwing up the jobs of the future in Wisconsin. And author Laura Bird has some book recommendations along the theme of getting back to nature with authors from Wisconsin. But first, we're going to listen back to a conversation with producer Parker Olson about, a couple of things. There's the Naked Gun remake, and there is great angst in Brewers Nation during this upcoming clip. The Brewers had just been crushed by the Cubs, and would things turn around? Spoiler alert, what you're about to hear took place right before a certain record-breaking run by the crew. I got a question for you. Is it all over for the Milwaukee Brewers? Is it? God. Should we just pack it up and go, season's done after getting shellacked by the Cubs yesterday? The answer, of course, it's a rhetorical question. No, but it seems like we always need one of those games at American Family Field where you hear all the Cubs fans, and it's just annoying.
It sucks. I saw Dan Schaefer on Twitter yesterday saying that he saw more accidents than ever before yesterday. Because of how many fibs were leaving and because of the rain, and they were happy because they won a game. So they had been drinking.
So there might have been some liquid happiness involved in there, too. Yeah, that's no fun. So, no, it's not all over, but we'll talk about the Brewers-Cubs game in just a bit. I got a question for you. You ever sometimes wonder, you take a moment and you change the focus of your eyes and you look at your glasses and you go, how am I seeing out of these things? Did a dog lick them and I just wasn't aware?
That's a good question.
There was actually, and Parker and I both wear glasses, but there was like a dead spot on my screen as I'm looking at my notes, and I kind of lift my chin up a little bit. I'm like, oh no, that's my glasses. That's what that is. I should clean those things off. And then right at the last second, I stumbled upon this looking through the entertainment news today. I got a question for you. Oh, Leslie Nielsen in The Naked Gun. Is it going to work or not?
I don't know enough about pop culture.
I suppose you probably know, did watch little or none of Leslie Nielsen in The Naked Gun, which I think makes you the perfect test subject for this.
Oh, good.
Because you won't have any of Leslie Nielsen's classic, comedy to fall back on or to refer to. So you have an assignment now, and I know you're busy. I know you got all those Mallards games and Nightmares games to work and everything else, but sometime in the very near future, one or 2 weeks here, you got to go see The Naked Gun. I will go see The Naked Gun. I will obviously compare it to the 1988 original. And the thing to know about this that I know you and any younger listeners out there don't know is Leslie Nielsen, sure, we look at him now as this comedic actor. He was hilarious doing The Naked Gun and Police Squad and all of that. But what you may not know is he was quite the serious, dramatic, tough guy actor prior to that, which is what makes this so interesting for Liam Neeson doing the same thing. He's going from, I have a unique set of skills, I'm going to kill you, to, playing, Lieutenant Frank Drebin. And now he's Frank Drebin Jr. in this one. So can he too make the move from drama to comedy? And we've seen other actors do it, you know, and I always love when they do it. Not everyone pulls it off, but when they do, it's very cool. So I have every reason to think Liam Neeson can pull this off.
As far as I know, Liam Neeson is a very, very good actor. I would think he's got that in his bag.
Yeah. So we've got that. So there's an assignment for the listeners as well. We don't often, you know, say as part of your homework, go see a movie. But here's the thing. It's smoky as all get out there. And if you can't do much outside, the theater is air conditioned. So let's go to the movies together.
Bring your air purifier.
Yeah. Luke on the text line, I really hope they don't try to remake Airplane. But if they do, Giannis better get cast in the movie in the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar role. That would be the best.
That would be awesome.
Luke saying, I really hope they don't try to make Airplane. You had me there. But as soon as you had the idea of putting Giannis in the cockpit, now I'm in. Now I got to see this. I've got to see this. Because, again, you saw, like, Peter Graves was in Airplane. He'd been in all the Mission Impossible series. Yeah. Nobody thought he could pull off comedy, you know. And he did. And, of course, that's where Leslie Nielsen had his first turn in comedy.
I love when athletes find their way into movies. Like, I think there's four or five Packers that are in one of the Pitch Perfect movies, and it's awesome.
Oh, those are good. It's when they tried to make it all about themselves, looking at you, Shaq Fu, you know, that it doesn't really work out.
Yeesh.
Tony on YouTube, I have complete confidence in Liam, so that's good. And Roger trying to pivot us back toward the real world here. 2 out of 3 against the Cubs wasn't bad. The Cubs leave in second place. And we're also less than 11 hours before the trade deadline, which is true. Now, the Brewers typically do not do much at the trade deadline. We don't go into the big drama, the big money stuff.
No.
I'm not saying it never happens, but it's not what the team is known for.
And I don't think they need to, especially right now. I kind of think we're at the stage that it would just throw a wrench into the clubhouse. Josh Hader. but
yes, Josh Hader. That's exactly. See? That's what made the point right there. Yeah. So let's not go crazy, kids. We've got a good thing. We've got a good core. If you can find something easy. Because look at what we did without the trade deadline. Aaron Civale going, oh, I'm not going to the bullpen. You got to trade me.
Yeah.
Sure thing, buddy. Here's the White Sox. Bring up Andrew Vaughn, who, you know, with a decent team, shows what he can do. So
I got a question for you, Pat.
Okay.
Does the trade deadline really mean that much in the sense that the Brewers have made the trade for Andrew Vaughn and there was another trade at the very beginning of the year that we made to get somebody. Those weren't trade deadline trades,
right?
But they were trades that made a huge impact. When we get to the end of this week, we're going to talk about how, oh God, the Brewers did nothing at the end of the trade deadline. Jeez. Why didn't
they
make
any
moves?
It's not like trade day. It's not like this is the one day to make trades.
Yes.
You know? You do it when the time is right, and that's what the Brewers have done. They're not going to wait till the end of July for this.
Grade the entirety of the trade book. Don't grade the week.
I'm not expecting any big moves here. And again, the Josh Hader thing really kind of seals the deal. Of course, a lot has happened since that July 31st conversation. The very next day, August 1st, the team beat the Nationals, then again and again, then swept 3 from Atlanta, then 3 from the Mets, and 2 more from the Reds, a record 14-game winning streak. What a ride we had in the month of August. Of course, now we're here in September. The Brewers are home, taking on the Philadelphia Phillies. Then tomorrow, Tuesday, is the team's first day off after playing 19 games in the past 18 days. 2:35 today is when you can hear the pregame on several Civic Media stations. Then, like I said, off tomorrow, back against the Phillies Wednesday evening and Thursday afternoon. Oh, and I did go see the Naked Gun sequel after that clip, and it's okay. But if you missed it in theaters, no problem. It's a perfectly good streaming choice from the comfort of your own couch. All right, let's head back into August for a moment. And a note about a landmark investment in America's future that was made 3 years ago and how much we've backtracked over the past 7 months. There was an anniversary over the weekend I wanted to mention quickly. This weekend marked the 3-year anniversary of the CHIPS and Science Act. It's the three-year anniversary of one of the many, many signature achievements of the Biden administration. But of course, don't get me started on how bad the Biden team was at informing voters about their accomplishments. But we have reached the three-year anniversary of the CHIPS and Science Act, and so it's a good opportunity to talk about the right way and the wrong way to get something done for American manufacturing. Let's go back to the pandemic and all of the supply chain disruptions. That included a shortage of microprocessors or computer chips. For example, there were all these vehicles, tractors, and other goods that were all but built, but they were still sitting in inventory because they were missing the microprocessor. They were missing the computer chip. And it led to recognizing the need to stop relying so much on foreign suppliers and build up the U.S. manufacturing chain and address some other high-tech needs in the process. And that's what led to the very bipartisan CHIPS and Science Act, which included investment tax credits for manufacturing, and those factories are going up as we speak, along with investments in research and workforce training and spaceflight and quantum computing and material science and biotechnology. It has spurred investments in AI and other data centers, including some that are going up in Wisconsin. In fact, Wisconsin was named as a regional tech hub under the CHIPS and Science Act with a focus on growing the personalized medicine technology industry. We're talking about tens of thousands of jobs being created by this bipartisan commitment to funding the jobs of the future. And then someone let Donald Trump back into the White House, where you are now seeing cuts in research. You're seeing trade wars. And last week, he was talking about a 100% tariff on computer chips not made in the U.S. Now, you might be thinking, doesn't that help with the chip making in the U.S.? No. The investment's being made, but factories don't appear overnight. You can threaten tariffs all day long, but it doesn't do anything in the short term other than raise prices. Now, Trump did talk about exemptions from these tariffs for big companies like Apple, so long as they promise to bring more manufacturing back into the U.S., but a big manufacturer promising to build more stuff in the U.S., doesn't that sound rather Foxconn-y to you? Meanwhile, smaller chip manufacturers that don't get exemptions but create the chips for our washing machines and other products, well, they're simply going to pass along the cost to consumers. So the CHIPS and Science Act was an investment that pays off over time. We did that same research to get to the moon, to win the space race. When President Kennedy said, let us send a man to the moon and bring him back to Earth safely before the decade is out, and we did it, we didn't do it by firing up a rocket and shooting for the moon the next week. It took time. It took the whole Gemini program and the Apollo program that Milwaukee's own Jim Lovell was a part of, as we discussed last hour, with him passing away at the age of 97. And there is that ability to tie in the CHIPS and Science Act with Jim Lovell's passing and remind us of the need to constantly reinvest in America and that these investments take time and you can't make things happen on a dime. Somebody is putting the jerk in knee-jerk reaction, and that's what these tariffs are. When we come back, it's not just the tech sector of the economy, it's the economy overall. From the heart of America's up north here on Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend your Labor Day morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. We'll continue a review of some of our summertime conversations in a bit. First, a reminder that Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but it is great to be partners in this little morning escapade. Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, with state outlets, newsletters, podcasts, and more. Of course, to toot our own horn here for a sec, ours is the only radio show in the Courier family. But let me tell you about some of the newsletters you could subscribe to get a little more information on news beyond the Badger State borders. There is, of course, our friend Mark Jacob, a veteran Chicago journalist whose newsletter is called Stop the Presses, a weekly update on how right-wing extremism has exploited the weaknesses in American journalism and what we can do about it. There's American Freak Show by Nina Burley, a weekly newsletter keeping an eye on MAGA extremism and its absurdity. And then Melissa Ryan has a newsletter called Control Alt-Right Delete, a weekly newsletter devoted to covering the rise of far-right extremism, white nationalism, disinformation, and online toxicity. For those newsletters and more, head over to couriernewsroom.com to learn more. Okay, back to some talk about the economy, which I chose because it's Labor Day. And this country, in my view, has really strayed from celebrating the workers who actually do the labor. We now tend to celebrate wealth or give wealth special treatment in the halls of power. Usually it's a little more subtle than what we're seeing right now, but you have a presidency that literally started with a bunch of billionaires in the front row. So it's never a wrong time to remind folks that for the people in charge right now, Labor Day is kind of a nuisance because Wall Street's closed. They maybe haven't crashed things yet, but that is not something to be proud of. Give a listen. Sean O'Malley, he's had a long career on Wall Street. He's a Hudson native, lives in Bayfield now, and is actually back working on Wall Street on a little project right now, I believe. And I've known him for 40 years now. Just a whip smart guy about the economy. And he was the one who told me many years ago when I was running for Congress in 2012, saying, I said, what is the single best thing we can do for the economy? And he said, infrastructure. We need, if we could get a massive infrastructure investment bill, it would create over a decade's worth of jobs and improve the way we get products to market and move people around the country. And it's just a complete win-win. Well, nothing, of course, happened on it until the Biden administration. And now we have that infrastructure bill. Although, as I could have predicted, again, when you make an investment like that in new jobs, you always hear caterwauling from people going, oh, there's all that government spending again. So that the roads don't fall apart and so that we create jobs. Regardless, I talked to Sean about the latest economic news, and it was interesting to see the uncertainty in the numbers. There was, myself included, a belief that the newest numbers on the economy, the GDP, the gross domestic product, would be down. And if they were down again, because they were down last quarter, that would mean that we were in a recession. But they were not. They were up. But the thing I noticed was the way everybody was kind of hedging on the numbers. And I asked Sean about this as well. And the fact of the matter is the uncertainty is just downright crazy right now because of, well, the tariff instability. We don't know. Is one day there's a tariff on these countries and one day there's not. One day it's 25%. The next day it's 15%. One moment we hear we have a trade deal. The next thing we hear is that it's a handshake agreement on a cocktail napkin and it's far from done. And that is pretty much how it was written up in the New York Times, saying that economic growth softened in the first half of the year as tariffs and uncertainty upended business plans and scrambled consumer spending decisions. They talked about how the gross domestic product adjusted for inflation increased at a 3% annual rate in the second quarter. Normally, that would be a great number, especially when you consider that in the first quarter, the economy contracted. It shrank 0.5%. But as the Times says, both of these figures are skewed. They were skewed in opposite directions because of the big swings in trade and inventories caused by the president's ever-shifting tariff policies. And so they don't tell the whole story of economic growth that appears to be positive, but is downright anemic. And it caused me to bring up the larger question. Okay, so it didn't get as bad as many had feared, but it's still sluggish. Is this another case of Trump getting to declare victory because everybody thought he was going to crash the car and he just dented it instead? And Sean pointed out, as others do as well, none of this sluggishness is necessary. We were enjoying the best economic recovery on the planet coming out of the pandemic. We were doing everything right, firing on all cylinders, had just tamed inflation, we're just getting started investing in new jobs, and now Trump is pulling back on all of that. And while we didn't crash, we are now in this, I guess to borrow an old Jimmy Carter term, this is now Trump's malaise that we're in. And we're going to have to live with it for at least a little while longer. Still ahead, cornerstones of the American promise to its workers had a big birthday over the summer. We'll review why we have those cornerstones, Medicaid and Medicare, and why people are rightfully making a big deal about the politicians trying to kill those programs and not being truthful with their constituents in the process. Also, we'll talk to State Representative Angela Stroud from Ashland. She talks about the new state budget from the standpoint of a new legislator and how things did not go the way she thinks would have been best for Wisconsin. That's all ahead, but first, I told you earlier about the newsletters from Courier Newsroom, but our bread and butter here is our own newsletter about Wisconsin for Wisconsin. So go sign up, upnorthnewswi.com. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be talking about the 60th anniversary of Medicare and Medicaid in just a sec, but first, this is what you could call a bifurcated show. We play on various levels at the same time. You could call this the 3D chess of radio shows. And what I mean by that is that all along the 10 stations that we're on and the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin, a few times throughout the show, some of the local stations will break away and have a local news update, but some of us will continue to jibber-jabber here out of Chippewa Falls and talk about other issues. And then we have the opportunity to play that back later the next day for folks who maybe didn't get to hear it the first time. Maybe they were away or maybe there was a local update, which begs this question. Hey, Pat, how can I always hear what you're doing on here? Here's what you do. You get us as a podcast as well. Go to Spotify and subscribe, follow the program. You can do it at Apple or any place else as well. And that way, if you hear that we've talked to somebody and you missed it and you want to come back to it, very easy to do right there on your device. So, for example, we have a new segment at 7:50 on Tuesday mornings called Way Up North, where we have a rotating series of guests from Superior, Ashland, Bayfield, you know, the whole Lake Superior, South Shore area. We talked to State Representative Angela Stroud, who is a freshman lawmaker going through her first state budget process. And so here's part of our conversation about her impressions on the budget and why she was a no vote on it. And now we get into the mixed bag of politics, and that is to be thankful for his service. But Governor Tony Evers has faced a fair share of criticism, as have others who are part of the state budget process, that it didn't turn out the way that perhaps it could have, depending on how people use their leverage or their negotiating skills or what have you. And the, you know, you going through the state budget process for the first time, is it fair to say it wasn't the most positive experience now that you've seen how the sausage is made firsthand?
That is very fair to say. This is not how you should run a state. And, you know, there are people involved in these negotiations who I would refer to them as lions, but that's an insult to lions. they're willing to do whatever it takes to retain power, hold on to power, get what they want. And so, you know, I said Tony Evers is a truly decent person. That's not true of many of the people he's negotiating with. And so it's a really, really difficult thing to watch, the budget process. It is not good governance. Things thrown in at the last minute that could never pass if they had to go through the regular legislative process. It's disturbing, and it's not how I hope we do things in the future. But if it is how we do things, then Democrats need to get really savvy about making it work for us and making the best choices we possibly can in a context where we don't always control the rules.
So there again was State Representative Angela Stroud talking to us in our Way Up North segment. Now let's turn our attention to the calendar. July 30th marks the 60th anniversary of when President Lyndon Johnson signed the Social Security Act of 1965 into law establishing Medicare and Medicaid. And I think until recently, it was a huge percentage of people that did not really have a clear idea of the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. They sound like these bureaucratic words that get jumbled a lot. And I think more recently, because of the threat to those programs, people are becoming a bit more understanding of the differences between them. Medicare. That's America's promise to its workers that after a lifetime of work, you will have access to health care and not have to worry about illness or injury causing poverty in your old age. 66 million Americans are currently served by Medicare. Medicaid is an American promise of compassion that those with disabilities will not have to beg on street corners for the health care they need, and that those who fall on tough times will have at least one option for stable, affordable health care when all of the other for-profit private insurance corporations would rather reject you or bleed you dry with jacked-up premiums. Now, there are those who say that the 71 million Americans on Medicaid, well, that's too many. I say, why isn't every American deserving of stable, affordable health care? After all, they have figured it out in every other developed country, and in many of those countries, they now have longer lifespans. They have fewer moms and babies dying. They have better education outcomes. So to the MAGA folks who support the Trump big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill, and it's $930 billion, almost $1 trillion of upcoming cuts to Medicaid, because they say too many folks are claiming low enough incomes to qualify. I ask simply, why is that the case in America? In the richest nation on earth, why aren't we doing more to address why so many Americans have incomes low enough to qualify for Medicaid? Why are people who work full-time jobs for some of America's biggest corporations still making so little in pay that they qualify for Medicaid, that our taxes subsidize their health care? Why are the corporations and the billionaires behind them sticking us with the bill? Walmart made $19 billion in profit last year, and a big chunk of its workers make pay low enough to qualify that they're on Medicaid. McDonald's made $8 billion in profit. That's pure profit. And yet has a big chunk of its workers making low enough wages to qualify for Medicaid. Amazon, $59 billion. And still, so many Amazon workers are on Medicaid, coverage that we pay for, that they don't pay for, that they don't pay for health insurance that covers their workers. How could that be? Well, they make big campaign contributions, and they've got people in Congress looking out for them, carving out exemptions. According to the Government Accountability Office, nearly half of adult Medicaid enrollees, 48%, and a little more than half of SNAP beneficiaries, 51%, who get what we used to call food stamps. Okay, about half of adult Medicaid enrollees, about half of SNAP beneficiaries, work at least 35 hours a week. And more than half of them work for large companies, meaning 100 or more employees. So it's not that they're working for some tiny business that can't afford health insurance. These companies can. They choose not to. I mean, Republicans cannot stop talking about their glee about adding work requirements to Medicaid, and yet it's clear that lots of working Americans are already on Medicaid, and the ones who aren't can't. The people who love to talk about getting rid of red tape for corporations have become masters of putting red tape in the way of healthcare through work requirements and all kinds of other paperwork for children, for families, for the disabled, for the elderly, all while cutting red tape and taxes for the very wealthy. So, if indeed there are deadbeats, and I don't doubt that there are, but where's the enforcement? Seriously, where? We talked about this with Elon Musk and Doge as well. It is a crime to defraud the government, to defraud the taxpayers. Why isn't this administration, frankly, doing more perp walks instead of sending its U.S. attorneys and federal prosecutors against its political enemies? Why isn't it making a show of the alleged welfare queens that they say are out there? Because paying for enforcement would mean increasing the budget to an agency, even if it's for the right thing. After all, look at the IRS. What are they cutting there? They're cutting enforcement so that people can continue at high income levels to cheat the system. Whereas if you beefed up enforcement against tax cheats, and if you beefed up enforcement against people who are defrauding Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, or anything else, you'd have a public that was grateful rather than fearful. Look, we've had 60 years to make Medicaid stronger. Instead, it's about to get a lot weaker. We've had 15 years to make the Affordable Care Act stronger. Instead, it's about to get a lot weaker. We've had 20 years to make Medicare Part D stronger. And instead, prescription drug prices are about to get a lot higher. And on top of all of that, on Medicare's side of the equation, there's Medicare Advantage, something that we've talked about previously, with those slick commercials, often with celebrities, that say, choose our Medicare Advantage plan because we have so many more bells and whistles. Medicare Advantage is a way for private for-profit insurance companies to get in on the action. They promise all kinds of extra benefits, but what you get instead are networks, like the old HMOs, and God forbid you try to go out of network because you'll pay more or you'll get denied your coverage. And you get more denials of coverage under Medicare Access anyway. I mean, there are many who say that Medicare Advantage has turned out to be one big taxpayer scam, and who am I to disagree with them? All told, we are about to see 12 million Americans lose access to affordable health insurance, either through cuts to Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act. And it's not like that happens in a vacuum. When they go without stable, affordable health care, when some of us go without that, the rest of us have to pay for that. So, happy birthday, Medicaid and Medicare. Hopefully we can make you live up to your promise sometime in the near future, if you're not killed off in the meantime. All right, what do you say we lighten the mood a bit, huh? Coming up in this collection of summertime clips, we're going to hear from Greg Bach. He's a regular part of our history segment on Fridays, so we'll dig into the vault to play a previous visit from him. But that means I should get you caught up on today's history events from September 1st. I mean, I don't have Parker here. I don't have a record player, so I'll just be telling you about today's history lesson, but you've got a good imagination. If I tell you that today is Barry Gibb's birthday and he sang "How Deep Is Your Love" with the Bee Gees, you can fill that one in, right, in your head? Anyway, the only surviving Bee Gee turns 79 today. With this disclaimer, if something happened to Barry or any of our birthdays since we prepared this show, that's their fault. They did not ask for our permission before heading for the exits, but I'm sure they didn't. So anyway, Barry Gibb is 79 years old today. Also, Lily Tomlin is 86. Folks nowadays know her from Grace and Frankie. I still remember her from Laugh-In. Dr. Phil McGraw, is 75. Conway Twitty, the legendary country singer, was born this day in 1933. Gloria Estefan is 68 years old today. Chanel West Coast, rapper and probably better known for Ridiculousness on MTV. She's 37 today. Zendaya is 29. And it was on this day 2 years ago that Jimmy Buffett passed away. Let's see. Tina Turner completed her comeback this week in 1984 with What's Love Got to Do with It, hitting number one. Go back to 1962 and Sheila by Tommy Roe, a song he wrote when he was just 14, hit number one and was the number one song for a couple of weeks in a row. And then finally, this week in 1981, Hall & Oates released their Private Eyes album, which contained two number one hits. Of course, the title track, Private Eyes, and I Can't Go For That. So there you go. There's September 1st. Greg Bach is going to help us remember the August 1st premiere of MTV. Back on August 1st of 1980, what? I'm going to keep you hanging with that till we come right back. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, no, what? Really? Nobody else? Okay, fine. Welcome to today's history lesson for this August 1st with, as Tony puts it, the most humble, the most punctual, the most thoughtful guy, the funniest man in Wisconsin radio. Robin Tigerton puts, the guy who reminds me to drink my water. It's Greg Bach, ladies and gentlemen, joining our Friday history lesson. Mr. Bach, good morning. How are you?
Hello, how is everyone doing?
We're good. We're
better
good.
That you're here now.
Yes.
And you have a dog.
Maybell.
Maybell, yeah,
has
here
made
too.
An appearance. Aw, yeah. That's great. So, how's your week been?
It's been good. It's right. Been busy. How about you guys?
Trying to stay alive. You know, it's a little smoky out here.
I was going to say, we're trying not to choke.
But it's always a good plan, trying to stay alive. That should be like one, number one, if not number two on the list.
It's right up there, yes. Yeah. I think we're going to go see Naked Gun this weekend, mostly, again, to get into an air-conditioned theater and get away from the smoke. Speaking of movies, that's how we kicked off today's history lesson. It was on this day in 2014, 11 years ago today, Guardians of the Galaxy opened with a lot of 70s favorites like that one and more. That soundtrack album is still one of my favorites.
It's a great one.
It really is. I should have had Dan Schumacher stop by. Today is the anniversary of the birth of Jerry Garcia. Born in 1942, passed away in 1995. Joe Elliott, the lead vocalist for Def Leppard, is 66 years old today. Public Enemy's Chuck D is 65. Coolio was born this day in 1963. Jason Momoa is 46. I got to ask you a question about that, but I should probably start the next song.
Older than Jason Momoa?
Yes, you are. And I'm coming back to that in a moment. But first, to get the next song underway, this is the anniversary of the birth of the late Jim Capaldi from Traffic. There he is.
One day you're up, next day you're down. She's got your head spinning around that slow.
So anyway, he co-founded Traffic. He was the drummer along with Steve Winwood, and he is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for that. He wrote the lyrics for the Eagles song, Love Will Keep Us Alive, and he was a one-hit wonder with that little soft rock hit from the 70s, That's Love. He passed away in 2005. Getting back to Jason Momoa, I was watching TMZ because that's where I get all my news from. And Jason Momoa, and as part of a publicity stunt for some new water drink he's pitching, shaved off his entire beard and mustache. Completely clean-shaven, completely unrecognizable. And the question becomes, Greg Bach, because I've seen your wedding photo and what a clean-shaven individual you are. What is it that would spark you to go, you know, I think I'm going to do this whole shave it all off for some kind of a purpose?
Or 50 to 70 less pounds.
That's it?
I'm that vain.
Come on.
This is all to hide chins 2 through 4. So
okay. I understand. Let's see. The next two songs are gonna come from 1981. The first is the number one song this day in 1981. It was by soap opera star turned singer Rick Springfield.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine.
Now, this was the, yeah, go ahead, Greg.
I love that declaration. You know, Jesse's a friend. He's been a real good friend. Then dot, dot, dot. I'm going to steal his girl.
Yeah. That whole coveting thing. It's really fun. That was the number one song this week in 1981 when a new cable channel began. It was called Music Television or MTV.
Whoa.
And here's the song from the first video that they played.
Oh.
So once again, as we often do in this segment, we're looking for there's a generational divide someplace.
Yeah.
And I am very squarely in that part of the generation when MTV first started. We would literally sit there for hours and watch music videos because it was such a new thing at the time. Greg, had it expired by then, or were you an MTV watcher when they actually had the M in MTV?
So I was 3 when MTV started, so when I came to age at a certain point, I did watch it as a kid, but I also was at a young age forbidden from watching MTV, so it wasn't allowed in the house.
Oh, okay.
But what I find interesting about MTV is that we would sit there and watch it for hours and hours and hours, and then when you listen to people my age and older saying kids just staring at their phones, I'm like, well, we were staring at TV.
I
don't really know what the difference is. We just couldn't put the TVs in our pockets.
Yeah, I was staring at Gilligan's Island and the Flintstones, you know, Hogan's Heroes, and then eventually we got all these brand new shiny music videos to look at, whereas Parker, music videos have just never... Have they ever been a thing for you?
Not really. Only as like the productions that people like artists will have made and post on YouTube. That's about it. Well, MTV. I mean,
that's the thing. That's what I really like is that music videos have made a comeback to YouTube with big productions, and they're uncensored, and they're still around. It's just you have to look for them now.
Well, and the thing is, back then, you had to make a video for every single song that was being released as a single, which led to some really bad videos. I mean, you could tell they were just slapped together, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like, you make one if the song inspires it, if you want to do it, you put more effort behind it, and it does make them better. But we definitely were there for the days of the assembly line of music videos. And it was fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was a good escape because, like you said, the TV, it doesn't fit in the pocket. This is National Raspberry Cream Pie Day. Can we expand that to raspberry cream cheese pie? Because that is one of the greatest pies. I love that so much. This is National Water Balloon Day, and this is National Sandwich Month kicks off today. Here's Greg's hot take for National Sandwich Month about BLTs.
Oh, they're a waste of time.
They're not a sandwich.
They're not a sandwich. They're an insult. We've fooled ourselves, America.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
All right, our weekend review panel and Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez all still ahead here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.